My thanks to all who have made this a very rich evening. I enjoyed listening to John, Carrie, Roy. Thank you so much. Thanks for the music. One Christmas story that I take a certain amusement from is about one man's attempt to abolish Christmas. He was the Irish-born British philosopher, essayist, Dr. George Bernard Shaw. And when he was a young man, he founded an organization called the Society for the Abolition of Christmas and made himself its president. Near the end of his life, in his 90th year, Dr. Shaw reported that, one, the society was still in existence, two, that he was still its self-elected president, and three, that no new members had ever been added to the organization. Shaw was an avowed atheist, and his society was his personal protest about a holiday for which he felt there was scant historical evidence. I was aware of that situation for some time, but it came to mind again just this past Sunday when I read a piece in the Boston Globe about a man who actually did succeed in getting rid of Christmas for a time. In this case, however, the person in question was no atheist. Instead, he was the well-known, much-respected, probably much-feared, 17th-century New England Protestant minister of the Puritan persuasion, the Reverend Cotton Mather. And due to his influence and that of his fellow Protestant Calvinist followers, December the 25th, here in New England in the mid-1700s, was treated like any other day. The shops were open, ordinary citizens went about their ordinary business, and this was exactly as Reverend Mather and the Puritans wanted it. For in what was then the theocratic Commonwealth of Massachusetts, the celebration of Christmas was legally forbidden. I think of this when I hear charges made in our day now that it is the secularists and the humanists who want to get rid of Christmas. I find that ironic, since the only people who ever actually succeeded in pulling that off were a particular sect of Christians themselves. The Puritans, as their name implied, were the ones who wanted to purify Christianity of any non-biblical or pagan influences. And that meant the celebration of Christmas had to go. Reverend Mather and his followers had a point, actually. There is nothing in the Bible that indicates Jesus was born on this date. Indeed, it was the appropriation of a pagan holiday by the 4th century Catholic Church that gave us our December 25th Christmas. In addition to all that, Reverend Mather was further concerned, if not aghast, at the kind of reveling that was done by some of the colonists at this time of the year, at some of their oftentimes riotous behavior, which was more than his Puritan soul could bear. And in disgust, he once declared, "Man dishonored Christ more in the 12 days of Christmas than in all the other 12 months beside." What made me proud, though, as I read further on in this piece in the Globe, was when I got to the point told about how it was the Universalists, as they were coming to prominence in the 18th and 19th centuries, who led the way in restoring the celebration of Christmas as a time of festivity and joy and happiness. It was also of interest to me to note, again in this same piece, that it was the singing of Handel's Messiah by Boston's Handel and Haydn Society beginning in 1815, that also helped bring about the restoration of Christmas in New England. But what intrigues me the most about all of this is that Dr. Shaw and Reverend Mather, who were each in their own ways very brilliant men, one a confirmed atheist, the other a devout Puritan, and yet these two individuals found a strange kind of common ground in their desire to get rid of Christmas. They're each good examples, I would say, of how one can be brilliant and still miss a larger and more important point. Shaw's determined atheism and Mather's rigid piety each gave them a case of tunnel vision, which caused the two of them to miss the need, the human need, for festivity and for fantasy and the hearing of uplifting stories. Dr. Shaw and Reverend Mather would have done well to have heeded the counsel of yet another wise individual, In this case, the Broadway composer Jerry Herman, whose character Auntie Mame sings out, "We need a little Christmas," right this very moment. So perhaps it took a Jewish songwriter and composer like Mr. Herman to grasp a deeper truth that eluded both Shaw and Heather. This season, this evening, is about the power of legend and myth and poetry and fantasy. And it's about how these things nurture and enrich our lives and deepen our spirituality and call us to show forth compassion and love and service to the larger human family itself, as well as to this great web of life in which we are all a part. As has been noted, the celebrations of this season do predate the Christian era, and the many themes of this year continue to resonate so deeply in the human soul and the human spirit that we are indeed still celebrating after all these ageless years. We need a little, call it what you will, but we need to celebrate birth. And that's why we gather, to celebrate birth. The birth of light out of a period of darkness, the birth of the sun and the lengthening of days, and the birth of a child who is to be the bearer of love and peace and redemption in a world greatly in need of all three. And what the Christian tradition brings to this winter holiday, which, as I say, had been in celebrating ages before that era, what the Christian tradition brought to this winter holiday, to this holy day, is a very beautiful story or legend, one that was just read to us. The historical setting for this story is reasonably close to the mark. There was a Roman occupation of Palestine. There was a census decree from the emperor. A king named Herod, who had certain ruling powers of the region, delegated to him by Rome. All that was in effect. And out of this setting came the legend of a child, born to peasant parents, under very trying circumstances, and whose birth was heralded by celestial beings called angels, and in other versions of the story, tracked by Eastern magi. And yet this was no ordinary child, as the legend came to be told. He was really of divine parentage, and he would restore the downtrodden people of his country to the former greatness they heard about under kings named David and Solomon. And yet even beyond that, this peasant child, as the story continued to develop, would redeem humanity itself. And when a story like this endures for more than 2,000 years, continues to be told, continues to be celebrated, that tells me that such a legend is striking human chords in a way that transcends the dictates and transcends the doctrines of any one religion, religious faith, religious tradition. The late Reverend Sophia Foss, who's considered the mother of today's Unitarian Universalist religious education, has a reminder for us in words that have become a kind of new scripture for this time of year. And she once wrote a poem titled, "Each night a child is born is a holy night." A newborn child is a bearer of hope. A newborn child is an indication or a reminder of the divine spark that resides in each one of us. A newborn child is also a sign that humanity still has a chance. A reminder that we are all still called to be bearers of love and peace for those in our human family. Each night a child is born is a holy night. But it seems that we need a particular holy night, the story of a particular child, to remind us of that. The child in the story came to be called the Christ, and that term too is a universal one. In the broadest sense of the term, a Christ person is someone who brings transformation and increased wholeness into our lives. One who gives us an enhanced sense of who we are and what our lives can be. Sometimes it's the one who has made sacrifices for the sake of our well-being or for the greater good of humanity itself. We would do well on this evening to think of those who have played such a role in each of our lives. So I'll close these thoughts with some words by a friend and colleague of mine in the UU ministry, the Reverend Morris Hipkins. He probably wrote this short piece for a Christmas Eve service in his own church at one time. Here's what he says. We are joined this evening by the light of candles. From light we have a symbol of warmth, of sharing, of newness of life, of enlightenment, and hope in a world of tragedy and darkness. For Christians, the light in the sky represents the birth of a new world religion by Jesus of Nazareth some 2,000 years ago. He moved people's hearts in ages past, and he moves people today. For others, light can symbolize a new life ahead, a new relationship, a new hope, the birth of a child. It can also serve as a reminder of persons whom we have lost, who maybe have passed away in this or other years. And for all of us, light is a symbol of hope for a struggling world, a symbol for health where there is sickness. It can mean new insight, fresh beginnings, a new commitment to peace. For all these reasons, we come together this evening to share in the joy of light, which is what we'll also do at this time. We will share in the joy of light, as you'll pass the light to one another. The ushers will come and begin to light those candles, and under the leadership of our musicians, we'll sing through Donat Nobis Pacem, you know, Latin, forgive us peace, and then we will sing one verse of the Silent Night.